Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 2473 of The Tom Woods Show with our old friend Scott Scheller, who introduced me at Porkfest several years ago before I gave my little talk there. In addition to being a Free State Project mover, he's been following the situation in Argentina pretty closely well before Javier Milei came along, but he's also had a particular interest in it. Well, in fact, I don't want to steal your thunder because you have a little bit of an interesting background vis-a-vis Argentina. So first of all, welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Tom. It's a great honor. I started getting to Argentina in like 2012. Prior to that, I probably couldn't even spot it on a map like most Americans. But I read an article in Fee in like 2012 that detailed the tremendous rise economically and then its 100-year decline, which was fascinating. Then shortly after, I got into Doug Casey, who has lived in a dozen countries. He's visited over 140 countries, and Argentina is his favorite country in the world. So I found that very interesting. And then when 2015, when I met my wife, who's an Argentinian with a and her father, Carlos Salguero, is a brilliant PhD Austrian economist in Argentina, I was like, I'm sold. And ever since then, I've just been hyper-drived in Argentinian politics, which are always fascinating. And that led me up to Milei in 2018 when he finally got onto the scene.
Yeah, so there's a lot to say here. Obviously, he's bombastic. He's outspoken. He's confrontational. He has, you know, sometimes people don't like the use of the word populist, but in his case, populist in the sense of he is reaching directly to the people to say that the people who've been ruling over you have made you miserable, that this is not some accident or, oh, it was a series of fortuitous events beyond anyone's control. No, this was done to you by people who were either stupid or evil. So very, very, as I say, confrontational. But at the same time, I have a friend who, David Howden, he's the department chairman of business and economics at the Madrid campus of St. Louis University. And he edited a volume of essays on economic topics. And this was before, at least I think a couple of years before Milei was elected president. So this is a scholarly volume of essays by scholars. It's not a popular group of articles. And he's writing an article or a chapter on the idea of market failure. And he's writing it at the level of an academic, which is why he was welcome in that volume. So he is not just a rabble rouser. He really, really knows this stuff. So give us a little bit of the background, because I bet most people, I don't know the story of how he came to be who he is today philosophically. Can you start with that?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Javier Milei got into economics during the 1989 hyperinflation in Argentina, which when you have such a dramatic economic event that just kind of thrust you into what is going on here. So he started studying economics in 1989 when he was pretty young, going into high school and college. His first master's was actually in Keynesianism or neo-Keynesianism, and he didn't find that very compelling. Like many people who study economics, Keynesianism just wasn't compelling to him. And so he got a second master's degree in economic growth. And that was a little bit, so he moved from a Keynesian to a neoclassical. And then he started to become a professor. And like you said, he has published 50 economic papers and he's written like 13 books. So this is an economic scholar. So what happened here was, when he started to become a prominent academic and was a chief economist on a major corporation in Argentina. And then in 2014, during his WEF speech, which people criticize him for going to the WEF in 14, but I didn't see any Tom Woods article or Tom Woods shows in 2014 criticizing the WEF. I don't think anybody really knew it was nefarious at that time. So during his 2014 WEF speech, it was on demographics and growth and that sort of thing. He started researching and found out that the hockey stick, so that after 1800, the economy just skyrocketed And he'd gone through two masterism programs, including one on economic growth, and they did not teach him that in Argentina. So he learned that leading up to this speech he was supposed to give, or this panel he's supposed to give at the WEF. And then he was like, this doesn't make sense. All that I've learned doesn't explain this rapid rise in growth. It really conflicted with him. And so he had a student that gave him a copy of Murray Rothbard's Power and Market. And that just blew his mind. And that told him, he's like, everything I've ever learned is wrong. And he started changing. This was all back in 2014. So this is only 10 years ago. This is like the crazy rise of Javier Milei. So he started to really get into this Austrian economics. He started to read Rothbard. He started to read Hayek. He already read Hayek, but he started to read more and more of these more radical libertarians like Mises. So he started to go to more of these Austrian-type conferences in Argentina. And this is where he met a guy named Jorge Trucco. And what's interesting about Jorge Trucco is this is a guy in Argentina. He was Doug Casey's realtor. So he's Doug Casey's realtor. And Doug Casey was actually radicalized by this book called The Market for Liberty. You might have heard of it, Tom.
Oh, yeah. The Tannehills. Yeah.
The Tannehill book. It actually still holds up today. So he was radicalized by this book called The Market for Liberty. And he showed it to Jorge Trucco, who could read, who spoke English and Spanish. And Jorge Trucco read this book, The Market for Liberty, and it radicalized him. He made him anarcho-capitalist because the book essentially explains how you can use markets to solve all the problems with government, public goods problems, and that sort of thing. And so Jorge Trucco was so profoundly influenced by this book, he decides to translate it into Spanish. And he translates this book into Spanish. And Javier Milei starts going to these conferences and stuff to learn more about Austrian economics and this stuff. And right when this book is translated into Spanish, he gives it to Javier Milei, who reads it. And that converts him to anarcho-capitalism. So that's how Doug Casey is what big reason why Javier Milei became an anarcho-capitalist. He starts reading our friend Bob Murphy.
So I heard.
Loss Theory and all this Rothbard's anarcho-capitalist work. And this is all in 2014, converted him to what he is today. And he starts really to hate the state. He really starts to hate the state, like Rothbard's question.
All right. So then, if you wouldn't mind, take a couple minutes, and I realize I'm asking a lot here, but take a couple of minutes and talk about, let's say, his rise as a public figure in the years before the big election of last year.
Right. So in 2017, he got onto this program called Animal Behavior, and it's a big program in Argentina, and Alejandro Fantino, he's a popular radio host, brought Milei onto the program. And in Argentina, being a scholar in economics with a PhD or with master's degree is actually much more rare. And so a lot of times they will ask for your opinion. So he goes on this show, Animal Behavior by Alejandro Fantino, and he just blows hell the water. So he goes on and he's just highly entertaining from day one. The first episode was on Keynesian economics, and he's like, I hate this so much. It's terrible. And so Fantino keeps bringing him onto the program, and he just becomes this big hit. Fantino's program brings on all these celebrities and stuff, famous Argentinians. And so Milei would be on this program, and there'd be these famous Argentinians, and Milei would be like, taxation is theft. The currency is worse than feces, and all this stuff. And all the other panelists would be like, oh, they would be like blown out of the water. They'd never heard any of this sort of thing. And it was just great television. And everybody wanted to watch. A lot of people would criticize Milei and call him a clown and all those sort of insults. But everybody wanted to watch him because he was so fun. And he would always cause a ruckus on the show. And so once he started going on that show, he and Fantino became friends. He started to go on more shows, and he became this bigger and bigger celebrity. We were watching him at the time. It was pretty fun because he only had a few thousand Instagram followers, but he was just every like month or something, you'd see his Instagram following just get bigger and bigger. And then you saw this kind of burgeoning libertarian movement in Argentina. When I met my wife in 2015, it didn't exist. There was my father-in-law, who was a PhD academic, and that was about it. If you were a libertarian or anything, that was a bad word. It meant you were selfish. So my father-in-law was a selfish man. So then you just saw this burgeoning little libertarian movement in Argentina. It was really fun to watch. And through that, he started to get notoriety. And he's just brilliant at getting publicity. He just has a knack for it. Like Donald Trump, he has a knack for it. He's got great sayings like, Viva la Libertad Carajo. He's been saying that for years. He's just got a special talent at getting publicity.
All right. So I think one of the things we want to know about most is we hear a lot of headlines about things he's doing. And I guess what I want to know, because I've heard that the legislature is not cooperating with him at all. And yet I'm hearing these headlines about he's cutting this many jobs, he's abolishing this, he's abolishing that. But I'm also told, as I say, that they're standing in the way of every major thing he wants to do. So can you sort all that out?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. When he got elected, Argentinian politicians have a little bit more power than they have in the United States. And in the United States, actually, as Jeffrey Tucker did a speech about this at Porkfest a couple of years ago, that it used to be the spoil system where when you got elected, you could fire everybody's previous people and then put your own people in. But over the years, they've added law after law after law that have basically made it impossible to fire any government employees from the federal level. However, in Argentina, they don't have that safeguard. And they sort of still have this spoil system that used to exist in the United States, but has evaporated. And it just never occurred to any Argentinian that they would actually cut government. Over the years, all that's happened is this has grown and grown and grown. The government employees, and nobody ever expected that anybody would actually cut spending. So Javier Milei comes into office and he's like, oh, well, that's good for me. And immediately on day one, he abolishes half the ministry. So they had either 18 to 21 ministries, including the Department of Culture, the Department of Women, Gender, and Diversity, and many of these, the Department of Sports and Tourism, many worthless things. So he, a few hours after getting elected, he cut it in half. And he reduced the amount of political employees' appointments by about half, by 40%. So he just didn't hire all these positions that are on these in these ministries. He just didn't hire anybody back. He's like, no contract for you. Then what he did to start lowering spending is he enacted this general audit of the government. He started to audit the entire, everything in the government. And immediately, and by the way, he already knew this, everybody knew this, he found just a massive amount of easy jobs and easy spending to cut. So essentially what happens is Argentina is, and Milei has a funny line about this, is that somebody will get a government job, and then let's say they go on maternity leave, and they never come back to the job and they still get paid. Or you have a friend, a politician has a friend, and they hire that friend to the job, onto the job, and they don't ever work. They're just getting paid by the government. The government gives them their friend's jobs. Or the famous Milei line that you might have heard online where he's like, the politicians, they give jobs to their wives, and then they start give jobs to their mistresses, and they start to give jobs to their mistresses' families, and by the end, there's no money for the people. So he didn't audit all these jobs, and he was easily, he found, and he did the Elon Musk thing, where they said, if you're working here, you have to go to work. So you have to actually show up to work if you want to get paid in Argentina. And guess what he did? Like 50,000 people didn't show up to work. And guess what happened to them? Axed.
Oh, so my.
And he was able to find about 200,000 welfare programs that were fraudulent right off the bat. Axed. Afuera. Yeah, and so he used everything in his power just to slash government spending right away. And because of the fact that they didn't have safeguards like in the United States, which make it impossible to fire government employees, he was actually able to fire a bunch of government employees. And there was this other component too, where the government gives money to the provinces through transfers, similar to the United States, but they have a certain amount they have to give them. And then above that amount is the discretionary amount. And Millay is able to cut that discretionary amount too. Now, we can get into why he did that, but right off the bat, he was able to cut a tremendous amount of spending and everything pretty much under his control he's been cutting down.
Everybody, Tom Woods here with another word on behalf of the outstanding Monetary Metals, where I have been very happy to have an account because I earn interest on my gold paid in gold. And I'm very happy to be joined today for this extremely brief mini interview with Addison Qualley, who actually works for Monetary Metals. How'd that come about? And I think you have a job where you actually really believe in what you do.
That's correct, Tom. Basically, I am the VP of relationships here at the company. I've been here since 2013, and I basically lead the sales department and help people come on board Monetary Metals and help handle their accounts. I've always been a big fan of freedom. Somehow along the way, was a fan of freedom just from high school. That really kicked up a notch when I started following your show in 2013. And I was working at a gold company at the time. I came to understand that gold is honest money and a very good thing. And when I learned about Monetary Metals back then, around 2016, it just seemed like something that could really change the world for good. If you can earn interest on gold and finance in gold, that is potentially world-changing, and you can get gold to come back into the monetary system. So that really excited me. I jumped ship from my old company. I joined Monetary Metals back then. And, you know, one of the exciting ideas we had in our head was, at the time, Uber was kind of taking out the New York City taxi cabs, and Uber had gone viral. And we thought if interest on gold, earning yield on gold could go viral, maybe that could become a legitimate alternative to the dollar. We're excited to be growing a lot since then. The company's grown by leaps and bounds, and it's been a very exciting journey.
Well, I'm very glad to be able to be a very small part of it. So find out more and join me. Open up your own account with Monetary Metals. Head over to monetary-metals.com/woods to get more information. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. Talk to me, though, about, let's say, I don't know why I hesitate to use the word enemies when it is the obvious word that needs to be used. Who are his enemies and what are they up to?
So his enemies are the Peronists and the Kirchners. And if you follow Argentinian politics, the last 20 years have been run by these kind of mafia figures called it's the wife. Cristina Kirchner is the most famous one, and her husband who died in office. Together, they served 12 years as president, and she served another 4 years as vice president. And she's easily the most powerful figure. And they've used this whole system to Peronism, which has been going on for 80 years, is basically leftist populism mixed in with mercantilism and involves a lot of taxes, a lot of money printing, and a lot of debt, essentially, and paying people off. The unions and anybody possible. And the Kirchners are particularly powerful the last 20 years. They use the state to increase their power tremendously. They started paying all the journalists. They nationalized some of the media channels. They'd use everything in their power to consolidate power. And unfortunately for the country, they were extremely corrupt and they got caught with the corruption, stealing billions of dollars from the treasury. And she has a 12-year prison sentence. And even after that, she still got elected vice president the last 4 years. So these are his enemies. They want to go back to this system of mercantilism, leftist populism, paying off their friends. And Milei calls them the caste, and that's what they are, the caste in Argentina, the political elite that control the whole economy and that benefit themselves and their friends at the expense of the people. And they are so desperate to get back into power. And part of the reason why Milei got elected is the economy was about to explode. So some of their playbook, and this happened in 2015 as well, when the only non-Peronist person was elected, is destroy the economy so much, and when it's about to explode, give it to somebody else. And that is really a part of their playbook. They really want to do with Milei. They want him to fail and then them to ride into power again.
You know, see, the thing is, if I were president of some country, I would take full advantage of, I don't know if I would call it the bully pulpit, but the pulpit. I would spend a lot of time talking directly to the public about what's really going on and who these people posing as their saviors really are and what they've really been up to and what these really pleasant sounding pieces of legislation wind up amounting to in practice. And then for the advanced student, I would give out recommendations for books to read. People would know absolutely what was going on by the time I was done. And I assume he's been doing likewise.
Oh, obsessively. Every single speech, he's talking about deficit zero. He's explaining the problems. It's not him, just him. It's his Ministry of Economy. It's everybody in his administration. That's the power of his party, actually. His party was actually established 2 years ago. 2 years ago, that's it. The Libertarian Party, basically. And their whole thing is reaching out with social media and being fun and entertaining. And that's why Malay was so big. And his whole thing, once he's got into office every single day, he gets interviews almost every single day with anybody possible. And he's always like, here's our problems. We have a big deficit. Our central bank liabilities are terrible. And here's our problems. And I've heard from multiple people that you go on the street in Argentina, you can ask anybody and they'll tell you that budget deficit, they know what a budget deficit is. They know what money printing is. And they know the problems of the country. And that's largely because Milei talks about it all the time. And everybody wants to know what's going on in the economy. So even his opponents have to start speaking in his language because that's all he talks about. And they'll be like, oh, they'll come up with these things and like, you know, but they start speaking in his language about the budget deficit, the money printing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of amazing what's happening there as far as the education of the people.
Yeah, that's what we really need. That's very important. So I couldn't help noticing a parallel with Ron Paul, that both of these gentlemen got their interest piqued in politics because of a dramatic moment in monetary policy or the history of the money in the country. And I wonder if the comparison can be made even more robust by the demographic of the followers, because for Ron Paul, it was notorious that he was reaching younger people. Now, does that still hold even in Argentina?
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's what caused him to win. He got 70% of the vote under 24.
Wow.
It's actually older people that are more against Milei that just don't understand what he's talking about. He got 70% of the people over it. And what's funny, Tom, is the Kirchners, the previous party, lowered the voting age to 16, thinking that it would basically give them permanent wins. And guess what happened? They lowered the voting age to 16.
Right.
The people under 18 almost unanimously voted for Milei. So it totally backfired on him because he's like this rock star. He's so fun. And you watch his social media and stuff. It is really fun and it's a little edgy. I mean, you look at his opponent's social media and it's like photo ops and it's so boring. And that's his innovation of his party and him is to totally be fun and exciting. And he really excites the young people.
Yeah, you know, but wait,
like Ron Paul.
What I can't get is how many young people in the U.S. are watching like geriatric social media. They're watching some of the most uninspiring, robotic human beings ever to walk this earth, and they're just going to go vote for them. Whereas in Argentina, they're saying, well, you know, maybe those aren't the people I want to vote for. Now, it's true, we don't have quite the personality that he is. And it is true that somebody who has that kind of presence and charisma and that arouses curiosity about himself, like, who on earth could this person be? Regardless of the content of what he's saying, I think has a tendency to draw people because people will feel like they're part of something big and popular. And unfortunately, that's what people want more than anything is to be part of something. It's great to want to be part of something big, but there is that instinct to want to be part of the cool group. And if our side suddenly becomes the cool group, well, then interesting things can happen.
Right. And also, the economy is so bad in Argentina that these kids just don't see a future there. It is so hard to get a job there. We're talking 200% inflation in 2023. So a lot of these kids, it was either Milei or out. We're a leading country. One of the reasons he won is they convinced their parents and their grandparents to also vote for Milei.
So that's
one of the reasons he won is, and he was the only person. If you watch the debates as I did, Tom, it was like the country wasn't even going through an economic crisis with the other people. Milei was the only person talking about inflation, talking about all the issues that affect everyday Argentinians. In fact, his opponent, Massa, his solution to inflation was a central bank digital currency.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that was his solution to inflation, was a central bank digital currency.
Wow, talk about being tone deaf.
Right. And even the center-right party, the other two parties, she was talking about insecurity, crime, and the problems of the unions, which is important, but she knew nothing about economics or anything, so she wasn't talking about inflation either. And it was only Milei that was talking about these issues, and that resonated with these kids. They're like, this guy's actually speaking our language. And Milei was the only one that was speaking against the lockdowns, against the COVID vaccine mandates, et cetera, et cetera. And all these other people, it was like, it was no problem. In fact, in Buenos Aires, they're doing a documentary about how great their decision was to lock down. And Argentina had the worst lockdowns in the world. They're talking about how heroic was their decision to decide to lock down.
How stupid. It didn't even do anything. I mean, how can you still believe in any of this stuff?
It killed, in Argentina, it was devastating.
Yeah, I mean, when I say it didn't do anything good is what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
It did plenty.
It was devastating. Everybody knows it, too, because it's a poor country that you're locking down. It makes it 10 times worse than the United States, which we have wealth.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Persist SEO. If you are getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. If you are a small local business trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, then increase your visibility with Persist SEO. What if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis? Well, then website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. Are you tired of cold calling and networking, meeting places getting shut down? Use your website as a lead generation engine. Or what if you're not showing up for your services in the search engines? Well, get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Now, the thing is, if Milei is going to make good on his determination to do something about price inflation, that is going to involve the most sweeping initiative probably of his whole administration to completely revamp the monetary system. And if he's going to be challenged at every point, I'm not sure, but again, that's because I don't know the details on the ground in Argentina, but how does he implement something like that without a massive groundswell of support? Maybe he has to go directly to the people and say, they're not giving me the authority to do what needs to be. Well, every last person who can breathe in this country knows what needs to be done. I need you to put pressure on them to do it. Unless you like 200% inflation, unless you like the idea of moving away from Argentina, well, then fine. But for those normal people who don't like these things, I need you to pressure these people to help me.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is doing his actions. He needed to be very quick when he got into office because 5% of GDP is a budget deficit, 5% of GDP. They have a 10% of GDP central bank liability. So altogether, it's 15% of GDP, which is enormous. And at the time, it was going at 1% a day. When he entered office, inflation was about 1% a day. Annualized, that's 37,000%. So it was heading to hyperinflation. So Milei had to act very quickly. And what did he do? He had to slow down the economy. He had to reduce activity in the economy. So that's why he was dramatically cutting spending. He cut subsidies. His DNU, he did this DNU that cut all price controls, most price controls, and also deregulated things, imports, and did an open sky policy. He deregulated the rental market. They had like basically national rent control that he got rid of, which immediately gave returns. So he had to move really quickly to reduce inflation and reduce the amount of activity. So it was going to be very painful. And he told every single person, every single time, he's like, we're going to make this adjustment. It's going to be painful for a while. And then it's going to be better after the pain. We're actually going to start to heal and we're going to get back to growth. And then the other thing that he's talking about doing is this competition of currencies. So similar to Hayek's proposal, he's not going it directly with dollarization like Ecuador, like Panama, like El Salvador. He's doing a little bit more a libertarian approach where he's got to do a competition of currencies. And there are some real big problems in Argentina where the government manages the exchange rate between foreign currencies. And this is partly because they have so few foreign currency. And then they have a quota system. So basically, nobody can access the banks to get dollars. Unless you are a business, unless you have some privileges, you can't access the banks to get dollars. You have to go through the black market. And in order to start this competition of currencies, but by the way, what he wants to do is he wants to have basically a competition of currencies where any currency can be used. So if you're close to Chile, you might use the Chilean dollar. Like if you're on the board, if you're in Misiones, close to Brazil, you can use a number of currencies, but probably the Brazilian real will be used more in that currency. But the overall, what will be used is the U.S. dollar. Because inflation's been so bad, Argentinians save in dollars. $250 billion of the Argentinian savings. Argentina has the biggest dollar savings outside of the United States, $250 billion worth of dollars hidden underneath mattresses in Argentina. So his goal is to actually open up this quota system and allow anybody to exchange dollars for pesos and allow those dollars to be used for exchanges in Argentina. So what will happen is instead of the peso, people will start using these dollars and eventually he'll be able to actually get rid of the peso altogether and enclose the central bank. And that's his solution. Besides lowering money printing, besides fixing the central bank liabilities, besides cutting spending, that is his ultimate goal. And the reason is because let's say he gets defeated the next election. What will happen is somebody will be in there and they'll have the same central bank and the same ability to print as ever. But let's say he can get rid of the central bank and get rid of the peso, then like in Ecuador, they don't have any ability to print. So that's Milei's goal. And he can actually do this without Congress.
Can you tell us, what is the Pact of May?
Right. So he lost and he did the legislation and very early on in his administration to try to liberalize the economy. And this involved privatizations of like Soviet-style businesses. They have 41 of them in Argentina. And it involved a great liberalization of the economy. In fact, it would have moved them 90 points higher in the World Economic Freedom Index, according to a report. So they would have, instead of being one of the lowest in the country, it would have been equivalent to like Germany and France. So it would have been a great liberalization effort. And he lost that. They didn't work with him. So he's making another. And in response to that, he cut all the transfers to the provinces. So he's like, okay, you're not going to work with me? All right, I'm going to reach my goals without you. And he cut, and nobody thought he would do this. This is like very gutsy. He cut all the transfers to the provinces. So we're like, we're not giving you a dime. And so this really hurt the governors a lot. And so then they're really complaining. And he's like, okay, I'll give you back some of your transfers if you work with us and actually get some of my legislation passed. So that's what the Pact of May is. He's like, let's do some of these things, including let's cut spending to 25% of GDP. Let's have a fiscal balance, a balanced budget. Let's start utilizing our resources and selling it. Let's open up trade to the international world. And that's what the Pact of May is. And because the governors have so much influence on the legislature, he has to get their approval. And this is what the Pact of May is. So he's trying to get the governor's approval so that he can actually pass legislation to get his agenda done. including like some of these privatizations and this liberalization and deregulation?
Well, ever since Bloodbath Gate in the U.S., I'm especially careful when I deal with a single word or a phrase that's quoted from somebody's speech. But I did read in an article by Reuters that he said to the Congress something along the lines of that if they really stubbornly refuse to buckle down and work with him to solve these big problems, then they will be facing, quote, a different kind of animal. And this has been interpreted, I believe, to mean, I'm coming to you in a conciliatory way now, but I won't be later. And I don't know what that means. But
oh, that is the discretionary trick. I mean, he has ruined some of these provinces by not giving them. The provinces over the last 20 years have just enormously expanded their amount of workers, public workers, the public spending, et cetera, et cetera. There are some provinces that rely on these transfers. And there's one province in named La Rioja. Because he got rid of these transfers, they had to issue a quasi-currency that failed within a couple of days because they couldn't pay their public employees. So, and it was a huge political. So this is the nuclear. What Malay is doing with these transfers is the nuclear. And the governors didn't think he was going to do it. But Malay, exactly what you're saying. He's like, I don't care if I ruin you. We're going to reach deficit zero.
I want to start wrap things up, but can you tell me, because you follow this way more closely than I do. I'm getting this all second and third hand. But is there anything else, anything big in the news we need to be aware of that I neglected to hit?
I will just say that it's very hard in Argentina right now. The price controls that he got rid of, the adjustment he's doing, is very hard for Argentinians right now. But even though it's very hard for them, his support is still very high. The Argentinians seem to understand what he's doing. And that's really important. And his enemies are absolutely abhorred by how popular he still is. They were expecting that he would be out by now. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make him leave in a helicopter. So it's very hard in Argentina right now. What he's doing is very painful, but he's very popular still.
All right. Well, do you write about this or tweet about this? I still use the old-fashioned word tweet. Or is there any link that you can give us so people can follow your thoughts on this matter into the future?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is Shellbanger. So you can look me up. Maybe I'll give Tom my, and I comment a lot about Malay, and I'm going to be starting writing a little bit more about Malay too. I've just been really busy.
It's just we all have an interest in his success, and we are all interested in hearing about his various travails. So it would be nice to have a place we can go that will regularly, you know, keep us updated on what's happening there.
Yeah, I would recommend another Bowtie Mera. He gives a Bowtie Mera on Twitter. He does a regular. He tweets about Malay on a daily basis and is really good. I find him very compelling. He also has a newsletter that I recommend following, but hopefully I'll start writing a newsletter soon.
All right. Well, good to hear. Scott, thanks so much for your time, your knowledge, and sharing your knowledge on this. This is very much appreciated by everybody listening today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.